This episode of the Mavs Film Room podcast is currently unsponsored. If you are interested in sponsoring us, please reach out to us on our socials, on Twitter, or on Instagram, at Mavs Film Room. If you're here just to listen to the podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcast to never miss an episode. And if you're a Mavs fan who's online, be sure to follow us on Twitter, at Mavs Film Room, so you can interact with our great community of Mavs fans and never miss some of the great content that we put out. So thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy this episode. Go Mavs. What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Mavs Film Room podcast. We're coming to you on Monday, March 18th at 9 p.m. Central Time. Just over a day after the Mavericks had an electrifying win over the defending champion Denver Nuggets, capped off by Kyrie Irving's 20-foot skyhook buzzer beater with his left hand to win the game for the Mavs. Just an incredible win on a Sunday afternoon against one of the best teams in the league. The Nuggets were 11-1 coming into that game since the All-Star break. The Mavericks handed the Nuggets just their second loss after the All-Star break. That caps off a 5-win-in-6-game stretch for the Mavericks, and this comes after our last episode in which we recorded after the Mavericks lost their 5th game in 6. So it's been a complete turnaround since our last episode. I think we're all very pleased to see the progress the Mavs have made since then, and we'll talk about it here. Vinay, Fazl, how are you guys doing today?
Doing pretty well. Lots of stuff going on with school and fasting and whatnot, kind of relate to Kyrie, but other than that, things are going well. Excited to see the Mavericks in this home stretch of the season.
Living on a high from yesterday still. That was one of my most favorite Mavs games I think I've ever watched.
Yeah, I mean, how could it not be? And yeah, Fazl, you made a great point. I mean, Kyrie Irving doing this while fasting. I mean, it was a early afternoon game for the Mavericks, so, you know, he's observing Ramadan, and so as a result, he didn't have any food or water in his system, I guess, at any time close to that game, which is crazy.
I mean, he played well on Thursday with food and water in his system, I believe, against the Thunder, because it was a late start. Today, he had some rough moments in the third quarter, specifically with kind of rough shooting stretch. But I mean, that fourth quarter, especially then, that's all you needed him for. And that's why I think Luka and Kyrie work on crazy shots, but sometimes it looks like it's a waste of time in pregame, and maybe they do it in practice a lot. But I mean, twice it's won us games this year. Luka hit that crazy shot against the Nets. That's like a horse shot, literally over two people. Arguably crazier than this shot in a way. But honestly, no, this shot's crazier. Kyrie's shot's crazier. But then this Kyrie shot, left-handed skyhook. I mean, how do you even, like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, I know. And the way that the Mavericks got to that point too was crazy, because, you know, they were up by as much as 13 in the fourth quarter. The clutch execution from the Mavs yesterday was not great, you know, outside of that shot. Nuggets came all the way back to take a 3-point lead, which, with I believe 26 seconds remaining in the game, Luka hit a 3-pointer to tie the game at 105. Then the Nuggets go down the other end. Jamal Murray misses a shot. Mavs get the rebound with, I think, 2.8 seconds call timeout, and that sets up the buzzer beater for Kyrie Irving.
So this whole segment, I mean, great after timeout play by Jason Kidd or whoever drew it up for Luka to get kind of a wide open deep catch and shoot three. And that's why we work on the catch and shoot threes with Luka over the offseason. People say, you know, he doesn't improve, he doesn't want to get better. I mean, he adds something to his game every year. Catch and shoot three was it this year. Much better shooter overall because of it, I think. And, I mean, that tied the game because of that. Jamal Murray then shot the ball too early on the mid-range pull-up. I mean, I know it was a wide-open look that I think if he got 10 times, he'd probably make 8 out of 10 times, and he just missed it on one of the two. And we got lucky, and we got a shot at the end that we really shouldn't have gotten, but we did. And, you know, sometimes we're on the wrong end of these things, like against the Cavs and whatnot. So it's like against the best team in the league, in my opinion. I think they're better than Boston. To beat that team, I mean, that can vault you into high momentum rest of the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Fazl, what are your thoughts on the game?
For three quarters through, I thought things were going excellently. And then, as you mentioned, Jay, in the fourth quarter, there was some execution that I found a little bit lacking. Part of it was on Jason Kidd. I thought his rotations in the fourth quarter were kind of suspect. And, I'm not trying to rag on him completely. The first three quarters he coached were pretty good, in my opinion, or at least not a huge negative, I would say. And again, like, adjusted pretty well to the loss of Josh Green. I'd say, also say that. But yeah, the fourth quarter, the lineup's not the greatest. Should Maxey be getting those minutes in the clutch at all is kind of up for debate, which I'm not totally convinced about. But at least he set up the game-winning inbound pass. That was nice. But yeah, I'm not sure. Like, still, I mean, when you have Luka and Kyrie, that papers over a lot of flaws. Luka himself, he was kind of like pressing in the fourth quarter. He played a little bit not to my liking in terms of, like, the shots he took, his shot diet, how much he dominated the ball. But towards the very end, of course, they figured it out and things were great. So hopefully that kind of like sticks with them, because look, on a talent perspective, I think this team is much better, or definitely better than the Western Conference Finals team. But the Western Conference Final team, that one executed like excellently. So be nice to see some of that with this team.
Yeah, I think this team is still trying to develop an identity, especially because of all the changes that they've had. But one thing is clear that they're going to go as far as Luka and Kyrie take them. I don't think that that's any shocking revelation, but that's really what it's going to come down to is their ability to make shots. You mentioned a couple of things that I think we should talk about. The Josh Green injury that happened against OKC last Thursday. And then, of course, Maxi Kleber and kind of the conundrum that's happening with him. Let's first focus on maybe things that have been working with the Mavs during this stretch of 5 wins and 6 games. I mean, to you guys, what's kind of stuck out to you as stuff that's been working for them that they weren't doing before during that 5 losses and 6 game stretch?
I really think the biggest key is the two big guys getting to play like most of the game. I think Gafford, maybe for a reason, wasn't playing as much against the Pacers. Celtics, those teams that kind of utilize the five out. We haven't really played those teams lately. Denver's kind of one of those teams with Jokic kind of playing from the outside a little bit. But I think the biggest key for this team is just dominating the paint on both ends of the floor. I think that's their identity that they can establish. I don't think this team's going to really be one of those past Mavs teams, from even 2011, 2000s, whatever, with shooting the ball from deep. And I think they're just going to have to dominate the paint. Protect the rim on defensive end, play big. I'm not a huge fan of Maxey closing these games just because of his offense, but I understand why Jason Kidd likes him out there because he just offers really good defensive size when you have him out there at the four, especially next to like DJ and then, in some cases, Lively or Gafford.
Yeah, I thought Vinay said it pretty well, but one thing that I thought was interesting from this recent series of wins, if not, I think it's interesting, I'll say that much, is that the Mavs have gone fully in, embracing the size advantage they have, because they are a big team now. But this last game I saw, I think there were lineups in the fourth with like almost zero shooting, because you had PJ at the three, and then you had Maxey at the four, who, in theory he shoots, but in execution he really hasn't been one for the last month plus. And of course, Gafford at the five, and if not Gafford, then you'd probably have Lively out there at that spot too. So it's just, I mean, you're just trying to create an advantage with Luka and Kyrie and vertical spacing at that point, which is valid. It really is. We saw it for ourselves. But I'm not used to, like, playing with no shooting. Like, that feels like a 2000s lineup or something that you just like run on 2K when you win a cheese, which is something to see that work out in real life to some degree, because the offensive rebounding and rebounding in general yesterday was amazing. So, like, I think that's another thing, I guess, like just looking to press the advantage on rebounds, because that's not something I've seen the Mavericks do consistently in, I don't know, way before Luka's time.
I mean,
Yeah,
think
you
about
go ahead.
the game in Denver the first time on the blue court, the horrific blue court, the in-season tournament blue court, where I mean, Aaron Gordon, I just remember just dominating us with his size repeatedly, and this game to out-rebound Denver with the huge. They have 2 6'10" wings, and then Nikola Jokic, who has the strength of, I don't even know, a silverback gorilla like Fazl compared to two yesterday. Like, the dude is just unbelievably strong, just a menace on the boards. And for Derek Lively and Gafford to make an imprint on that game with rebounding, it was really those two guys. I know Luka here and there helped with the rebounds, but it's really the two big guys, like the centers, that just dominated the glass. Derek Jones Jr. too should not be forgotten. Like, his crashing of the offensive glass reminded me of Dorian Finney-Smith back in the day, only 2 years ago, but that's back in the day now.
I mean, it is back in the day, because Dorian Finney-Smith was on a, you know, long gone iteration of this Mavs team. But I think you guys made some great points about what the Mavericks identity kind of is trending towards now. I mean, we all know Luka and Kyrie are the stars. Like, they're going to go as far as they take them. But I think, like you guys said, dominating the paint, protecting the rim, rebounding the ball, those are areas which I think the Mavericks have an advantage on most nights, which is crazy to talk about, because that was not the case this entire season, and really for the entirety of Luka's tenure with the Mavericks up until this point. The Mavs have not been known as a tough interior team. They've been known as a soft interior team with one of the weakest, you know, front court rotations in the league. Now I would say they have one of the strongest front court rotations in the league. And you just look at it last night or last afternoon against the Nuggets, the Mavs dominated the Nuggets in the paint, 62-38 paint points advantage over Denver. Since the All-Star break, the Mavericks are averaging the eighth most paint points in the league, 52.3 paint points per game. And then in terms of second chance points, I think the Mavericks have been one of the better second chance points teams in the league this year. But since the All-Star break, they're averaging just about 16 second chance points per game, which is second in the NBA behind the Utah Jazz. So, you know, that just speaks to an offensive rebounding game that we haven't seen from the Mavericks. So, you know, the shooting is not quite at the level, or not even close really to the level that we've seen from past Mavericks teams. I mean, I think I saw a stat today in which the Mavericks have shot 32% from three in, you know, in their last five wins, which is pretty crazy. I mean, we'd love to see that number get better, but I think it's good to see that, you know, Luka, Kyrie can get in the paint, obviously. And now that you have Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford, like, those two guys are very efficient scoring in the paint too. So I think that's how the Mavs are going to win their games.
Yeah, I think both Luka and Kyrie, like, they can't attack the rim enough. And same with PJ Washington on the drives. They can't attack the rim enough. Like, they just need to be relentless at attacking the rim. Dante Exum, when he's in the game for his 20 minutes, attack the rim relentlessly. Just, that's got to be their identity. I think during the Western Conference Finals series, like, that was an issue I had at times, like, them not attacking the rim enough. I feel like they got a little too jump shot happy. I'm a big proponent of shooting threes, especially the wide open ones that Luka creates. But at the same time, like, you know, when it's not necessarily hitting that way, you gotta just attack the rim. Just get to the basic principle of basketball. Use your size. Try to score people at the rim. And we can do that as well as anyone with Luka and Kyrie. And then, I mean, Derek Jones shows some ability finishing at the rim. PJ Washington, I feel like he needs to try to dunk the ball a little bit more. Like, the floater stuff is, like, I like that move, but feel like you should try to dunk the ball a little bit more. But just in general, I feel like the whole team they can't attack enough. Like, they just got to keep doing it rest of the way.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. Fazl, did you want to say something?
No, not really. I guess one, one small thing I would like to mention, though, is just I can't really think of much, but I guess one thing about PJ Washington is that from the moment we traded for him, I kept on thinking about this one stat from last offseason when he got the contract he currently is on right now. I think somebody like, what's his face, Kevin O'Connor, was hyping him up. And I know Kevin O'Connor is not exactly a guy we look to all the time, but he mentioned, like, he brought out some stats that, like, in Charlotte, PJ Washington was great at running the pick and roll as well as finishing pick and rolls. And that's not something that, outside of like one or two games I've seen isolated, I've never really seen him run the pick and roll here, which is, you know, there's something to be said about, like, stuff you might do in Charlotte, which is not exactly the greatest team, versus, like, you know, stuff you got to do for a hopefully contender team in Dallas, which, you know, even if they're not there at that level right now, they're still trying to execute on those terms. But I think, you know, letting PJ handle the ball and getting into some actions with him as the ball handler, That could be another interesting wrinkle to the offense because we've never, I don't think he can be the third ball handler, but in a pinch, like let him work with the ball. Like that's, I think that's something that can be explored. So hopefully in these last 14 games, right, we can see some of that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I want to see that a little bit more. I think some of the, infrequency of it here in Dallas kind of has something to do with the fact that neither of the Mavericks, like top two centers, like Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford, they're not shooters. So as a result, they're often going to be the role man in those sets. And, ironically, PJ is going to be more of a stretch big, although he's not really knocking down his shots like that. But if they're ever able to get to a point where they can play like a smaller lineup where he's the five, I think we could see that more because I agree. Outside of that first game against OKC, we really haven't seen them run any set where he's like a pick and roll, diver.
Dude, at this point, with how everyone's shooting, they might as well just let Derek Lively like sit behind the 3-point line, just jack that shit. Like everyone else is just missing shots. Like you might as well try a five out with Derek Lively, maybe against the Pistons when you play in Detroit. I don't know. Like you might as well try something. Like I bet Derek Lively can't shoot that much worse than Maxi and PJ right now.
I mean, his
Well,
shot
they're.
looks pretty good in warm-ups.
I know his shot's probably too high arcing. I don't think it's gonna work for. I don't know. We'll see. But
There's
everyone
a game against
promised
San
me that.
Antonio tomorrow.
I mean, yeah, I think that, I mean, yeah, there's what, 15 games remaining until the end of the season. I mean, that's something that they may look
Probably
to.
they're not going to try. They're probably not going to try it this season. I was kind of half joking, but
Well, yeah, not Lively, but like on the
man,
PJ one for
that's
sure.
like on a just to kind of completely switch subjects. If Derek Lively ever developed a jump shot like that, like
Oh,
I
yeah.
mean, what I saw for him against Denver, we haven't touched on it really yet. But I mean, his job against Nikola Jokic, like 2-for-8 shooting against Derek Lively when he was the defender and holding Jokic overall, the whole team deserves a lot of credit for holding him to 16 points. Like, I mean, they're talking about the best player in the world, and he just wasn't having the impact that he could. I mean, part of it's probably on him. He's missing shots that he normally would make or whatever, but Mavericks deserve a lot of credit. Jason Kidd deserves a lot of credit for the whole overall defensive scheme on Jokic and holding him to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, now that the Mavs have that athleticism at the five position with both Lively and Gafford, I think that, I mean, Jokic is not a player that you can stop. And like you said, he did have a bad game yesterday. But at the same time, I mean, both of our, centers made it really difficult on Jokic. And, for all this time, Jokic was able to bully, the likes of Dwight Powell and Maxi Kleber. That's not the case anymore. And I think with the way that the refs have been officiating games since the All-Star break, it kind of allows Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford to get away with a little bit more physicality than they had been able to in the past.
Yeah, no, for sure. They just, I mean, like you said, we're just worried about the shooting from the role players. Like, I mean, it's tough because they're going to get open looks the rest of the way, every game, the rest of the season. Luke and Kyrie are going to create open threes for them. And just the fact that they can't hit them consistently right now is just annoying because that's like, imagine if this team could hit open threes consistently. Like, what are we talking about as their ceiling?
I know. And it sort of begs the question as to how the Mavericks are going to get guarded, in a playoff series, for example. And we've seen teams do this to the Mavs this year where they take away the role guys and just let Luka and Kyrie wear themselves out. But if the role players continue to shoot this poorly, I do wonder if defenses are just going to cue in harder on Luka and Kai and dare the role players to beat them. Because that's a viable strategy with how a lot of the guys on this team are shooting right now.
I mean, that's what I would do. I'm not guarding PJ. I'm not guarding Maxi. I'm just letting them shoot. I mean, I would be as disrespectful as the Mavericks were with Josh Giddey, like right now, until they prove it otherwise.
It's crazy. Look, back in December-ish when Dante was, going on his run with Kyrie out and he was just totally percolating. Like his 3-point shot was legit and teams were keying in on him then. And at the same time, I think Derrick Jones, he was also playing pretty well. So back then, the role players were stepping up, and Kyrie was out, but Luka got to work with a little bit of that. And now, kind of the opposite. Like everybody's playing hard, But, you know, like you guys mentioned, the shooting has not been there for everybody not named Luka or Kyrie. So it's just, I guess, really trying to refine that spark.
Yeah. And on a game-to-game basis, it's fine because, you know, you only are playing one game in a playoff series, though teams have time to adjust. And that's my biggest concern right now with the Mavericks is shooting, because outside of Luka and Kyrie, they don't really have a volume three-point shooter that's shooting with efficiency right now. That used to be Tim Hardaway. He's struggling. We've talked about it a lot. You know, their highest percentage guys are Dante Exum and Derrick Jones Jr., but those guys are not high volume shooters. I don't think defenses give them that respect either. So it will be interesting. I'm a big believer in the law of averages, so I do think that Tim Hardaway Jr. will come around on shooting eventually, but I don't know. They
But
just
my
got to
problem with
survive
Tim
until then.
Hardaway is not even just his shooting, it's just his decision making on both ends of the floor right now.
I agree. I
Like
agree.
that's my biggest problem. Like I get missed shots are gonna happen, but some of the shots he just chooses to take are like, what are you doing, dude? And that's like part of the reason why I just don't want to see him whatsoever. And I would rather see Jaden Hardy in those minutes if they're if like someone has to be in those in that role. Because they don't want to play Lawson or Max clearly, like otherwise it would have happened by now. Like they're just not gonna They're not factors for the season whatsoever.
Yeah, and I think that both Tim and PJ Washington have like the green light to just, you know, let it fly right now, because I think it is obviously in the Mavs' best interest for both those guys to break out of their slump. I mean, if you look at a number of 3-point attempts since the All-Star break, Luka leads the team with 129, Kyrie is second with 98, PJ Washington is third with 75, and Tim Hardaway is fourth with 74. Tim Hardaway is shooting 32% since the All-Star break on threes. PJ Washington is shooting around 27%. So those two guys
They gotta
have the
get
green light. They got to hit, though.
they yeah they have to get PJ Washington. I mean, I like the idea, as Fazl was saying earlier, try to use him as a ball handler a little bit more, get him a rhythm maybe early on in games. And I mean, you got to get that guy going. Like if he can, maybe he's not supposed to be a third option on a title winning team, but you've got to make him the third option on this team. And so they just have to get offense from him. He has to be able to close every game, like no doubt about it. Like it can't be like a, oh, should we close with PJ? Like he has to close every game. Like that's how good he has to be.
I agree. He's kind of like the biggest X factor for the Mavericks, because I mean, we've seen what he's capable of defensively. But can you be better than Maxi Kleber offensively? That's
Definitely.
really what
I
he's
mean,
got to be.
it wouldn't matter how he's shooting for me. I would just rather have him out there offensively, even more so than Maxey.
I agree. I mean, and we've seen him, especially like in Charlotte. I mean, this has been a down season for him shooting even before the trade deadline. But we've seen him put up 43 points in a game. We've seen him put up 20 something points with the Mavs before. It's just like, can you get him looks early on in the game that hit or that go down, so he's able to see the ball go in the basket, get some more confidence, and not, you know, not be such a liability? Because these last two games for PJ have been very rough shooting the ball.
Yeah, and I mean, I believe in him. I think he'll get going, but I just want to see some like maybe some variation from the coaching staff. Just try to get him going, X's and O's wise early on in games, and maybe like Fazl was saying, use him as a ball handler and pick and roll. And I don't know. There's a lot of different stuff that you can do. The offensive X's and O's capabilities are endless in basketball. Like you can do whatever. So it's
Exactly.
up to how they want to do it.
Yeah, using him as like sort of a play initiator with Luka and or Kyrie moving off ball could be interesting, because that would force the defense to scramble more, and that would allow, you know, that would allow PJ Washington to be able to relocate after, you know, after a dribble handoff, right? That could get him going for easy baskets near the rim. So we'll see what they come up with.
I mean, what do y'all think about? Do you think guys think Maxey should have? I mean, it kind of worked out with the defense in terms of being able to put Maxey on Jokic and then having Derek Lively as a help defender in that fourth quarter. Like they got a lot of crucial stops because of that. But do you guys think it's like whatever upside he could brings you defensively is worth what he gives you offensively, which is basically like a negative at this point?
Boz, I'll let you go first.
I mean, I guess this is sort of a cop out, but I think it's kind of matchup dependent. Like against Denver, I'd say, yeah, it did work out. But if you were
Yeah.
going up against instead a team that's more athletic, more able to like not to say that Denver isn't athletic, but you know, even in terms of like the center spot, just more able to like, or more willing to run the ball, like, you know, go fast paced, like say, I don't know, for example, Sacramento, would that be like a game I want to give Maxey heavy clutch time defensive minutes to? I'm not so sure about that because, you know, even though he still has the defensive IQ, of course, and he still, in theory, can shoot and whatnot, I'm not entirely sure about his body, like, you know, being able to react in time for, you know, more quicker players. And I don't know, like, I guess it worked yesterday, but I'm not sure it's going to work all the time. And I know, like, obviously, a month ago, he was having that weird little mini resurgence for like a week or two, which was great. And it made me think, like,
Little
oh, if he's
insanity run.
back, yeah. If he's back like that, then, you know, there's really no limit to what we can do defensively. But I guess we'll have to see because in 2022, he wasn't having really that good of a season either, but he turned it way up in the playoffs, which I'm not going to count on that to happen twice, but I guess, you know, it's not impossible.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you, Fazla. I think it's both matchup dependent and situation dependent because, you know, at this point, when you have Maxey on the floor, you're really just selling out to stop a specific player on defense. And in the case of the Nuggets, it's Jokic. But with other teams, like you said, against the Kings, like if you were selling out with Maxey on the floor, that's probably to stop Domantas Sabonis, right? But, you know, you're going to be giving up significant points on offense and even in the transition game, right? So I think it is dependent on matchups, it's dependent on situation. Or as part of that situation, it's also like, how are the other guys playing too? If you have three other shooters or four other shooters around Maxey, then you can afford to do it. But if nobody on the team is hitting besides Luka and Kyrie, then it becomes a little bit more difficult, and I'm not sure if it's worth it.
For me, I think Lively or Gafford always have to be on the floor. That includes the end of the game. And I think like yesterday, I would have probably gone Luka, Kyrie, PJ, Derrick Jones Jr., Lively or Gafford. And I think, I mean, honestly, like Derrick Jones Jr. is a much better rebounder than Maxey. I don't even think it's close. That's how bad of a rebounder I think Maxey is. He just has like negative instincts for rebounding and loose balls in general. That's a different discussion, but that. Like, I feel like you can get away with not having Maxey on the floor. With Denver, I guess you have to have him out there. That's fine. Against Sacramento, I feel like you could live with Lively or Gafford on Sabonis. Then they usually play four shooters around that. So you can kind of just go with your guys. You got to hope that, you know, Luka, Kyrie, and PJ are like solidified. That's every game, they're closing games. So that's what it has to be. And then your fourth spot is kind of whoever's hot or matchup dependent, whether it's Dante or Tim, maybe. Most likely not Tim, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah.
Derrick Jones Jr. I think Derrick Jones Jr. should try to close more games than he has. Like, he's our best, I think, point of attack defender. And I think he's like our best guy against like the best of the best in terms of ball handlers in the West. So that's who I would put on guys, especially when Josh Green's out for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I think yesterday's closing lineup was kind of experimental. As the season winds down, I think Jason Kidd is still trying out a few different things. I mean, I don't think we could for sure say that yesterday's lineup worked, but like you said, there's more combinations to be explored. Like we've seen Exum be successful in the closing lineup. Maybe we'll see Derrick Jones Jr. here down the stretch too, but I think now is the time to really try things out as we get closer to the playoffs. I mean, the opponent that the Mavericks will, you know, fingers crossed face in the first round of the playoffs, still to be determined. It changes every day and obviously is dependent on what seed the Mavs end up at the end of the season. But yeah, I mean there's a lot up in the air right now.
I really think like with the way the Clippers are playing, like four, five, six, those are what the Mavericks need to shoot for. Like you just got to get out of the plan. And then I mean you're realistic, I mean not realistic, but like your dream scenario is to try to get fourth seeds, which means you get game seven at home in a first round series. Like that should be the lofty goal that they have for the rest of the way. I don't know if it's realistic, but at the end of the day, they have to focus on winning every game by game. A lot of these teams are gonna take care of the losses by themselves. So Mavericks just need to take care of the games they're supposed to. If you split Sacramento, that's great. I think honestly, like I want to see them take both of them. I want to see like a killer instinct type of thing from this team to go to a place like Sacramento that's going to be super hostile, playoff environment. That crowd, you know, they haven't seen a lot of playoff series in their lifetime, so they get rowdy for a lot of big games in the regular season. So
Especially with the way that they kind of ruined our season last year, beating us in the first game of the Luka Kyrie era. So, we owe them one. It's a big game for the standings, so I hope the Mavs are up to the task for it.
Yeah, the three of us watched that game together, and it
Don't
was
remind
very frustrating. That was the Terrence Ross night.
It was a bad night all around. But I'm just happy that it's definitively a new era for the Mavericks now, or definitively a better era for them, because they now have exceeded last year's win total. They now have 39 wins. They finished last season with 38 wins. So symbolically, we've moved forward, but the job is clearly not finished. I think, like you said, Vinay, the focus should be winning every single one of these 15 games before the end of the season. Because if you take care of business and play hard and play honestly, I do believe that the basketball gods will reward you. Whether or not the Mavericks are able to finish, fourth, that remains to be seen. I think that's still quite a long shot. But if they can get out of the play-in, I think that's really what I'm looking for here in these last 15 games.
Yep, absolutely. I like how they've played lately, but I just still have some concerns, obviously, on both ends, just mainly with the shooting, honestly. I think shooting is probably my number one concern. Then how are they going to, I mean, who's going to guard De'Aaron Fox next week? Like, that's going to be kind of interesting without Josh Green.
Yeah, especially with one of those Sacramento games coming on the second night of a back-to-back. We've seen the Mavs play Sacramento twice now on the second night of a back-to-back. It's a tough matchup against a team that loves to play fast. So,
But I will say there's a nice little scheduling quirk with the Mavericks, because right before the back-to-back, so they play the Jazz on Monday and then the Kings on Tuesday next week, but they have 3 days of off time before that because they play the Jazz on Thursday here in Dallas, and then they have 3 days off and they play Utah on Monday. So, I mean, that's an added bonus to that. So, not a normal back-to-back, I guess.
yeah, it's unique. All right. Well, I think that was all that I kind of wanted to talk about in this episode. I'm not sure you guys have any closing thoughts.
No, not really much for myself. I feel like we covered quite a bit today.
Vinay?
Oh, they just got to take care of business tomorrow against Wemby, which is not going to be, I mean, it could be challenging, could also be just a blowout like they should, but never know with the Mavericks.
I mean, yeah, San Antonio plays hard. I mean, I'm not taking that one for granted. The Mavericks should win that game. And like you said, the motto for these last 15 games is take care of business, because the Mavs do have a lot of favorable matchups here to end the season. So we'll be watching tomorrow, as we watch almost every game. So I appreciate you all for listening to us on this episode of the Mavs Film Room podcast. Not sure when we'll be back with another episode, but I'm sure it'll be this week. Thanks, Vinay and Fazl, for joining me, sharing your thoughts as always. Always a pleasure to talk to you guys about the Mavs. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting finish for the Mavericks this season. There's a lot up in the air with the seedings of the teams higher in the Western Conference and the seedings of the Mavericks themselves. So hopefully they can continue these winning ways, and just got to keep building until the playoffs. So follow us on Twitter at Mavs Film Room if you haven't. On Instagram as well, at Mavs Film Room. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcast and never miss an episode. We'll see you on the next episode. Go Mavs.